Welcome to Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news, trends, and hottest topics that focus on advances in cybersecurity and cyber industry economics. Our expert yet down-to-earth hosts make cybersecurity straightforward. They ask the tough questions and make this challenging topic something that everyone can understand. Our candid approach lets guests open up on topics we would all like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at newcyberfrontier.com. That's www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join today's host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
And this is Abe Thompson here at New Cyber Frontier from the SecureSet Studios in Colorado Springs. Today we have the distinct pleasure of having as our guest a fellow veteran, Army guy, but you know, he's still a great member of our serving cadre. Mr. Ron Savunda, he's the Vice President of Cloud Compliance at ScaleSec. Ron, it is a delight to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Abe. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. So, Ron, how did you get to where you are? I kind of cheated and looked at some of your bio stuff, and I really just enjoyed the way you sort of narrate your journey to where you are and kind of where your start was. So you're obviously clearly successful in the cyber industry, cybersecurity in particular. How did it all come to be?
Yeah, maybe a sort of drawn out story, but I grew up in a coal town, where a lot of businesses had gone under. My mom worked at United Parcel Service, so we were a single parent household, and I was working at a warehouse running a forklift, and I ran into a guy. I didn't have any money to buy lunch. I ran into a guy who was willing to take me out to lunch, and he happened to be a military recruiter, and he was like, "Hey, what are you wasting your time driving this propane forklift for when you could be doing all this cool technical stuff in the service?" It maybe sounds a little trite now, but at that point in my life, I didn't realize I was smart. Like, people have to tell you that, or you have to experience it in order to understand it. I'm sure you've run into that
too. I get it.
So I went and took the ASVAB, and he handed me the thing back, and he's like, "Well, you got a 99 and I was like, "Out of what?" And he's like, "99. You can do whatever you want, except I couldn't be a nuke because I didn't have a high school diploma. I picked a technical job, which at the time was aviation, because I really liked Top Gun. I'm not going to lie about that. Went in the service, right? Exactly. Went in the service as an enlisted guy, learned how to be an avionics technician, and then sort of fell in love with computers, got my first laptop, played Diablo, added a bunch of peripherals to it to be able to do that. Probably dating myself by saying I played Diablo 1 in Windows 98 Second Edition.
No shame
but,
here.
No shame in this game. But I've just always been a computer fan, a fan of technology. I've always had an interest in it, and that carried me through my military career as I became an officer and stuff like that. And I continued my education, I ended up with about 4 college degrees just because I really wanted to learn more stuff while I was in the service.
Sure.
And then I was a fire support officer, which had a lot to do with computers, especially me making sure I didn't hit us with any of the things that my computers called.
Yeah.
Then when I got out, I kind of had to get a day job. There's not a ton of use for people to call airstrikes or mortars in the civilian world, as much as that saddens me.
Yeah.
So I went out there and got into defense contracting, kind of got in where I fit in because I knew I had a clearance. I knew it would be an area where I would understand the operating environment because I had been a military person. And a very nice retired master chief named Ralph hired me at General Dynamics, worked for him for 5 years, and then sort of realized I had a knack for security.
Yeah.
And I mean, you remember this, Abe, because like back in the day, a system administrator was also the cybersecurity guy.
Everything.
And was also the network engineer.
No separation of duties. Yeah.
No, he was also the help desk.
Like, yeah.
I was putting toner cartridges and printers, and joining people in the domain. So I figured out that I really liked security. I had sort of a knack for it.
Yeah.
And then as this sort of became a separate industry, which I don't necessarily agree with the sentiment that we are separate industries.
Sure,
I think
sure.
We're all computer people. I just sort of specialized in that. And I've been having a great time doing it ever since. I really enjoy my job.
Sure. Well, it sure looks like it. I mean, just some great experience, a little bit of time at Coalfire even. And then, getting into this, you're sort of in another pioneer space, really, for a lot of us on the security side with cloud compliance and bringing all those things to bear. And it seems like now we're starting to see this level of comfort with cloud space rise. I mean, I know back in the day, I don't know of any military commanders that would have been very comfortable putting stuff up on the cloud and relying on that. And now, that world has changed. There's a lot of opportunity to rely and to trust the cloud. Have you seen that?
I definitely have. It's funny because when I was in DoD, we didn't have any cloud platforms at the time.
Sure.
You know, and virtualization was this thing. I remember talking to a guy with a PhD who was like, oh, virtual machines, that stuff's a fad. That stuff's garbage. You know, like what we really need are more APC racks and Dell R710 servers. That will fix our problem.
But rack units.
Exactly, yeah. And now I go to companies, even companies that are mainstream adopters. They're not early adopters. They're not, you know, startup companies in San Francisco. And they're like, I feel like we'd be more secure if we weren't in this data center and we were in the cloud. Yeah. And I'm like, I agree with you. Because the argument that it's just someone else's data center, while technically accurate, does not capture all the nuance of all the things cloud does for you.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
The multiple layers of abstraction that add in that security.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just the concept of serverless, you couldn't do serverless
in
a data center 5 years ago, but you can do it now, and you can offsource the risk and the compliance of all that stuff to Amazon or Google.
Indeed.
And if you're a shop, that's a great deal for you.
Yeah. Let's pick this up in just a second after we go hear from our sponsors.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
And we're back at SecureSet Studios here in Colorado Springs, and we have as our guest Mr. Ron Savonda, who's vice president of ScaleSec. We were just kind of discussing the now greater reliance and trust on the cloud. You know, you just hit one of my old favorites, that concept of multi-level security and those types of things. And so how has this emergence and now dependence kind of impacted the industry?
So, I mean, I think from my point of view as a compliance officer, it has impacted the industry in a myriad of ways, but one of the most important ones, because I'm in Brooklyn today with a client, lo and behold.
New York.
no rest for the wicked.
Folger pizza.
Exactly. So one of the things we have a lot of trouble articulating, say for maybe a payment card industry audit, are things that the cloud does that maybe a data center didn't do.
Yeah.
So, you know, requirement one of PCI talks all about firewalls, and tons of compliance frameworks do that, right? So it's, you know, how do you watch ingress and egress, and how do you make sure you filter all the things? And you're like, well, we're a serverless environment that operates as a managed service inside, you know, Google or Amazon. So 90% of that is on the onus of that is on Google or Amazon. So articulating that to an assessor and having that person say things like, well, what about the edge of your network? You know, like, we don't have an edge to this network.
Wow.
You know, we're a collection of cloud services that are strung together to perform the function that a monolithic application used to perform. Like, we don't have an edge, therefore we don't have an edge firewall. Therefore, we have to manage ingress and egress with other cloud services and also with the underlying infrastructure of the cloud service provider.
Sure.
Man, you would be surprised how hard that is to articulate to even smart people.
And like, and to get them to trust.
That
the sound of that anyway could set some hearts aflurry, you know.
It absolutely can.
Yeah. And so what is it that you're able to kind of bring to the discussion that, you know, depicts the clear accountability that's there and sort of the reliability?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I think just because my background overwhelmingly has been in being an IT guy, you know, and being a person who implements and configures and controls technology, I think the best assessors and the best advisors for compliance, in my opinion, are people who have that background.
Yeah.
And I get that that's my own bias because that's what I did. But even when I worked at Coalfire, the best assessors we had were folks who came out of industry, right? They weren't CPAs, they weren't finance folks, they were folks who came out of technology.
Right.
So they can articulate like, hey, listen, you could think of this cloud thing really as a physical computer in a rack.
Mm-hmm.
And in this physical computer, if we go through OSI, I'm personally, me as the CISO, I'm only responsible for layer 7 of this whole stack. Layers 1 through 6 are managed by my provider.
Right.
And here's how my provider manages them. And really just articulating that here's how the data flows go in and go out. Here are all the ways we're doing all these different features to have defense in depth. There is a lot of nuance in that nowadays. Yeah. And I find that as customers take products to market, that is a huge hurdle for them because they're a fast-paced startup. They've made this great thing, right? They've made the next Uber or the next Lyft, and they're trying to get an IPO, so they're trying to get a SOC 2 report, or they're trying to go through a PCI audit because they take credit cards. and they're just getting destroyed by an assessor.
Yeah.
You know, because that person's coming from a FinServ background or an on-premises background, and they just run headfirst into each other because it's a cloud platform.
Yeah, and there's that dual education. You know, of course, for all these great startups, the wonderful thing is that now a reliable cloud is a force multiplier, and it's a tremendous cost saver. You know, so that's the one side. So how do we hit the on-premises guys with some knowledge? How do we actually get through to them?
Yeah, I mean, I think the perfect answer, like in many things, right? You know this being a fellow military guy, the answer is not like it's either A or B. Mm-hmm. It's probably both A and B. It's just to varying degrees.
Yeah.
And I really think the answer is there's a place for on-prem and a place for cloud.
Yeah.
You know, I worked at a really great small company on Bainbridge Island called Farbank Enterprises, mm-hmm. which is really, when I came out of DOD, I worked for this guy named Christopher who really forced me to learn commercial things.
Sure.
You know, like he's like, no, we don't rack out servers. You're going to build virtual machine manager. And mm-hmm. he's this very surly kind of matter of fact guy who taught me a whole ton of stuff about IT. And we ended up realizing that, like, you know, we had a bunch of workloads in AWS and we outsourced our compliance for PCI by having all our workloads in AWS. But there were some stuff like our ERP was Oracle at the time that were just best served by living on-prem.
Yeah.
We could manage it better that way. It broke every time we tried to put it in the cloud and it was onerous. So, I mean, I think the reality is there is a sentiment that cloud is going to eliminate on-prem, and that is not true.
No.
The normality of this is going to be that the very edgy tech companies that are startups are going to be all in on cloud, right? They're going to have no Active Directory. They're going to have all their users live in G Suite. They're going to be on GCP or AWS. But the more likely scenario is we're going to have enterprise, we're going to have laptops, we're going to have an Active Directory, we're going to have printers, and we're going to have a cloud environment.
Yeah.
And I think that means there's space for both on-prem and cloud people in that. Sure. And I think that's probably not the sentiment that's expressed now in the industry.
Well, and the logic, the history, the data, even the psychology probably, you know, would point very clear to the fact that balance wins. You know, how you see some of the old brick and mortars that come back to prominence because they've now accepted the reality that there's, you know, technology, there's the cloud, there's all these other things, there's the online, you know, the folks that are at least able to keep up maybe with an Amazon, just, you know, having, you know, revolutionized the industry. And it's interesting too, I was kind of looking at some of the background and clearly you have never stopped learning. You said you're working on your GCP, I guess, still right now, or did you get that knocked out already?
So I'm still working on my GCP solutions architect, and as much as I am loath to admit that I'm doing this because it's so utterly painful. the CIPP, the privacy cert,
sure.
which is written by lawyers, and wow, is that a hard thing to learn?
Yeah.
But you know how this game is. It's just like being in the military. There's no stopping.
Yeah.
You know, last night, I woke up in my hotel room last night. My CIPP book was laying across me. I'd been asleep for 2 hours. I missed dinner. I got up and did my 5K because I'm running the Taji 100 this month.
Of course, why not? You know,
because why not? Because I'm a glutton for punishment. And then I went back to bed. But like,
sure.
People ask me that a lot on LinkedIn, and in particular veterans. They're like, "Hey, like, how do I get all this stuff you've gotten?" And I'm like, "You just got to keep doing it all the time.
Yeah.
Like, you have to like it. You have to you know, brush your teeth thinking about it when you go home at night and your significant other is not around. You have to be in AWS or in GCP or tinkering or, you know, working on the new Chromebook that you just bought because you didn't learn how Chrome OS worked and you want to learn about that thing too.
Yeah.
You just have to be interested in it.
When we talk about passion really being the bulwark of this industry, you know, because you can get people that are smart, you can get people that are technical, but if you don't have passion, I don't see a long-term future for you in something like this because it's always changing, always moving, and it's exciting. And I hope my students are listening to you in terms of the dedication, you know, that it takes to keep this going. I also liked, honestly, that you inserted that just passing reference to, you know, when your family's not around, getting at it, because obviously we still want to have balance. And, you know, you've made a nod to that, and a lot of people miss that, too.
So I definitely believe in, and this is like an old school leadership term, mm-hmm. you know, the total person concept, which is what one of my battalion commanders really instilled in me. And he was basically like, you know, like, you don't want to be so awesome at your job that your spouse and your kids hate you.
Yeah.
So I try to do that. I try to, you know, make sure I'm not constantly stressed out, like that my blood pressure is not high, that my significant other enjoys spending time with me. I try to work on my physical fitness because if you're tired and unhealthy, you're sick a lot.
Yeah.
And if you're sick, you can't be sharp. And I have to be sharp for my job.
Yeah.
So I consider it a benefit to my position that I do all those things.
Yeah. And people are depending on us. And that's why so many of us veterans come to this industry anyways, because we still get to protect those who can't necessarily protect themselves or help them defend themselves, you know, and that's important. And so one of the themes that's kind of coming out that I'm hearing too is that now redundancy has a new look to it. And, you know, people are able to increase their, you know, dependence on the cloud while still retaining a balanced dependence on on-prem and things like that. How does that resonate now as you go to and fro? I know it's sort of from the compliance perspective, it might be different, but what do you see in here?
I mean, we do a lot of cloud engineering work. The two primary like missions we have at ScaleSec, our two gigs are, you know, product goes to market, we take them through a compliance framework, or product goes to market and needs engineering to be secure in the cloud. Maybe it's a lift and shift, maybe it's a refactoring. So, I mean, we definitely do cloud engineering a lot. One of the things I see a lot about cloud that I really like that I think people overlook, maybe because it's so obvious sometimes, is, I mean, we were data center era people. You remember what redundancy was like in the data center era. Like, it was RAID 5s and redundant power supplies and hybrid mesh networks and cold sites and warm sites and, you know, lukewarm sites. And maybe I'm being a little facetious, but it was difficult to do all that stuff. You had a capacity plan. You had to have a really robust incident response plan. You know, now with cloud, you can do multi-region, multi-availability zone. You can click buttons and things replicate for you.
Right.
You could do stuff that used to take us months of planning in seconds. Yeah. And I think we overlook that sometimes, particularly because I'll look in cloud environments with clients and be like, so you guys run in multi-region? They're like, maybe we could. And I'm like, man, click that button, run multi-region, run multi-availability zone, like get that fault tolerance in there, follow those principles, those pillars of security, you know, for a well-architected framework, you know, do all those things because it's just a button click now.
Yeah.
You know,
and it doesn't. Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and it doesn't seem like there's room for a meh attitude in this industry. Let's take a quick second and go hear from our sponsors again. We'll be right back.
Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information.
And we're back at SecureSet Studios here in Colorado Springs. This is Abe Thompson. We have as our guest the VP of ScaleSec, Ron Savonda. And you were just talking about this sort of exhortation you've given to people to go multi-region. Let's unpack that some more.
Yeah, it's just, I think when we used to be on-prem era folks or data center folks, we would talk about how annoying all this capacity planning and incident response process, all these NIST kind of policies you had, that basket of those 17 horrible policies you had to have when you were a system administrator or an ISSO. And cloud kind of got rid of a lot of that stuff, so you tend to overlook it now.
Yeah.
So I'll go in and look at customers and be like, okay, well, you know, if your app goes down, how is it going to continue to operate in this current setup you have? And you're like, oh, I kind of guess it's not. Like, you know, or we could do auto scaling groups. And these all sound like obvious things. Like, people are going to listen to this and be like, well, yeah, well, no kidding. You know, or like, you could set up auto scaling groups, but you haven't.
Yeah.
Or you could set up load balancing in a more effective way, but you haven't.
Yeah.
So I think it's because it's particularly with Amazon, when you look at the number of services they have, like the solutions architect test I took is not even the same test anymore.
Wow.
Like, there are so many services that it's hard to comprehend them all. So it becomes information paralysis when you're trying to architect and engineer an environment. So you lose some of sort of the basics, right? You lose fault tolerance, high availability, having lots of redundancy baked in, making applications stateless. People lose that.
Yeah.
So they have these applications that I'm adding something to a cart on the internet, and I'll see this happen to me when I'm buying stuff. I'll be like, my cart disappeared. And I'm like, oh, they're probably in a cloud environment, and their application auto-scaled and it's stateful, and I lost the state of my shopping cart because they haven't put it in a database somewhere else as a service.
That brings it home.
There's a lot of there's a lot of stuff where just because you put something in the cloud, my boss says this all the time, Aaron, just because you put something in the cloud doesn't make it cloud native.
Yeah.
right? Yeah. So you have to re-architect and refactor things so they function like they're in the cloud.
Well, and dare I say that the temptation becomes, hey, I can reduce stress now that it's in the cloud, and we maybe get a little bit lazy because
And mostly, I mean, honestly, there's so many good people in our industry. What I see overwhelmingly more than lazy is overwhelmed. Like I go to a shop and it's three security people and they're doing a fantastic job, but I'm like, okay, like, let's talk about your alerts. He's like, well, I get 800 a day. I was like, you get 800 alerts a day? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, well, how many do you get to a day? I'm like, well, it takes us about an hour to review each one, so we might get to 8 of them.
Oh,
and I'm like, so every day you are net 792 findings.
Wow.
And you just have to, you have to automate inside automation now to do that, yeah. right? Like, a human can't do that anymore.
Sure, sure.
So now you have to use things that alert you at scale. You have to, you know,
where's the new noise floor, you know?
Yeah, you have to reduce your signal to noise ratio. Yeah. Exactly, spoken like a signal guy. You have to reduce that to every alert being something that's relevant to you because you have this fixed amount of time, but now you're responsible for 6,000 instances running in an environment. Like, you wouldn't have been responsible for that many computers 10 years ago as a single human.
Right, right. So cloud's here. We're moving forward, but what is on the horizon? What things, other than the norm, what things keep you awake at night? What are you excited about for the future? What do you see coming?
Yeah, I'm really excited about this concept that if we're a small company, we want to take a product to market, because I really like small business. I believe in small business in the United States. I think it's a super important thing. And we want to take a product to market. We can use cloud services now. So we could use something like, and I'm just going to pick, you know, cloud agnostic examples. We could use a serverless environment, right? So a function of some sort where we just put our code in it and it runs in a serverless way. We could use cloud storage like buckets, and we could use load balancing and things like memory caching to build an application in the cloud. And it's, we don't have to maintain a computer. We don't have to maintain a containerized environment. We don't have to maintain a virtual machine, which means we don't have to scan anything, which means we don't have to change control anything, which means we don't have to patch anything. And I've seen small shops doing that now, and that really excites me, because that means that the thing that's going to limit your innovation is your imagination and not your ability to pay a lot of money for technical things.
Sure. Well,
and I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, and sounds like too, you're saying that it could decrease, you know, the computing power cost. I mean, because, you know, small business to go out and get, you know, your i7 and your 16 gigs of RAM or whatever, so that you can run some of these virtual machines. If that requirement is diminished, maybe some of these other folks can afford to do better things for security that they would.
Yeah, it's going
to
save you money. It's going to save you risk too. So if I put my CISO hat on and I talk about, you know, the three things every business wants to do is optimize cost, decrease risk, and increase profit. How do you decrease risk? You decrease risk by using managed services from a cloud provider, because then they own the majority of the risk. So if you're a tiny shop, I would rather use a cloud function, right, like Lambda, or use App Engine, then build my own virtual machine, because now all my clock hours are spent on maintaining and controlling and securing that thing.
Yeah.
So now if I do it the other way, I have more time to make my product awesome.
Yeah. Build your widget, you know, build your dream. And I like what you were kind of intimating earlier on about us not being sort of a separate industry. On the one hand, we should be integrated, and I do love that. I do want people to recognize that we are cybersecurity professionals, not just some IT guy. However, bringing us back in to where we really belong, business sense, all these other things. How do you become an evangelist for that that truth, really?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, because in my notes to prepare for this, I wrote to myself, like, what is something I could tell Abe that is something that you would think is a crazy talk for a cybersecurity consultant?
Do it.
and it's overwhelmingly that I do a ton of management consulting.
Yeah.
Like McKinsey style boring management consulting. And sorry, McKinsey guys, I don't mean you're boring. But I show up and they have this awesome security team and these crackerjack developers and this fantastic CI/CD pipeline and this great product. But because of the interplay of their teams and the culture of their organization, they're very inefficient. So they have stuff on the open internet that cybersecurity doesn't know exists, because cybersecurity doesn't have access to the asset inventory that corporate IT maintains.
Right.
I had that happen to me.
Right.
So I think the real answer is you build these teams that are composed of these different professions cohesively.
Sure.
And the company I'm at right now does that. So I had a meeting with them, and they showed up as a single group of humans. And I was like, oh, what team are you guys? They're like, there's only one team. It is just us.
Wow.
You know, he's the security person. I'm the DevOps person. Here's our enterprise IT person. Here's our, you know, our Scrum Master who controls our sprint backlog, and et cetera, et cetera. And they were just a team. So because of that, when I had a security question, someone answered it. When I had an enterprise IT question, someone answered it. And they were cohesive and they were working together. It reminded me of like in SOCOM units, how you have a joint operations center.
Oh, yeah.
Like they functioned like a jock.
Boom.
And they were super good at their jobs because of that. So the shocking thing is you have to look at your arrangement and organization of your people.
Yeah.
And because you're a tech person, you often totally neglect that and think it's pseudoscientific and it's this arbitrary artsy thing you don't need to worry about. And you totally do need to worry about
it. Come on, it's still people. You know, there's no reason why those of us from a tech background can't be very effective at helping an organization with a multitude of things. And think about it anyway, technology is just a force multiplier. It's a tool. And I just love that. Now, you're sure this wasn't a dream? You actually saw an entity that operated like a team?
It was actually, it was this morning. I was fascinated by it.
Very
nice. Like, wow, we need to take pictures of you and show you to everyone else.
parade them about and show them that it is possible. I mean, we spent so much time here even focused on soft skills and the ability to articulate technical concepts, the ability to fit into a culture. That's just as important as anywhere else. And if we don't sort of follow your zeal for integrating cybersecurity, we will end up being pariahs that are you know, grousing in the corner saying, oh, you guys aren't doing it right, as opposed to, you know, here's what I understand. What do you understand? And let's make this work. I do love.
Oh yeah, that. I've been to shops where we've had a series of meetings and everyone was in the room, and like I slack my boss and I'm like, we're cybersecurity. Like they're not in here, you know. And I'm like, I ask someone and they're like, oh, them. Like yeah, they'll be in tomorrow in their own meeting from 12 to 2, and then they come in and no one else is physically present. And I'm like, wow, you guys have not made friends with any of these people. Yeah. And we talk to them and they're like, well, you know, the other parts of this company, we don't get along with them super well. And they tend to see us as Dr. No, right? They tend to see us as the people who show up and say they can't do stuff. And I'm like, you got to integrate with them. Yeah. You got to see what their operational process is. I mean, I'm singing to the choir. This is standard military guy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You have to integrate with your people who are on the ground doing things and figure out how you can best facilitate them accomplishing their mission. Also, while having a secure environment, you have to do both of those things. Right? Because a perfectly secure computer is unplugged, you know, but an unplugged computer doesn't make widgets.
Nope. You know, you bring back some painful memories. You know, when I was the signal security officer for the carrier battle group, I mean, you know, I put out my reports about how poorly we were using security in our communication, and squadron commanders would try and find me.
They would come look for you.
They would come look for me. So I'd have to go hide in the admiral's office or whatever just to be safe. And so I get that, you know, that historical thing, but man, what a delight to know that there is movement and successful stories of us being a part of the whole. Now it's interesting though. So how do we still retain a good training pipeline and get folks to train up and want to be in cybersecurity while still keeping that gospel of integration? What do we need to change or what do we need to do? I might actually take notes for my school right now.
a lot of people, when I say this, they get grumpy because it implies that I think cybersecurity is maybe not an entirely entry-level job. And to some extent, I do think that. But I think you start out by growing a cybersecurity person out of being a basic IT person, right? Out of being a person who knows how to be a system administrator or a network engineer or someone who knows how to rack out gear. And to do that, you have to get down there and do that job. And realize that that job is difficult and it's challenging all by itself, you know. And then as you develop into a cybersecurity person, you have to have that lens of focus, right? It's just like the same way that, in my opinion, biased as it may be, the best officers used to be enlisted people.
Yeah.
Because you know the effect your policies have on human beings. You know what it's like to take a soldier's pay from them. You know what it's like to take a soldier away from his family because someone took you away from yours.
You've swung them off, you know.
Right, yeah. Right. So I think if you're a good cybersecurity person, you realize the impact that your power, which you have a lot of as a cybersecurity person, has on people who operate and maintain and utilize that environment. Sometimes it's not about, you know, you need a 16-character password. Sometimes it's about, well, you know, tell me about operationally why you can't have a 16-character password. Tell me about that. Tell me about these workflows. Like, let's come up with the compensating control. Let's come up with an alternate implementation. Like, let's help you do your job and also meet this arbitrary requirement in some way so we can check the security box.
Well, I guess, you know, the argument could work in other ways. You know, if I have a good production background or I've been in the business line and understand what it means to have a deadline to get the product out, and then now I'm implementing a security standard that might cause some challenges, I'm probably more effective at integrating and articulating that message if I understand the pressure they're under, and that I understand the controls that the CFO's under and why he's concerned about making these expenditures when you're telling me I have to buy this IDS and all this other stuff. And so, you know, I really like that maybe matrixed model of, you know, let's cross-pollinate even broader than we might have thought. Not just IT, but business and law and some of these other areas.
And to your point, I've met some people that were product owners. A buddy of mine, Jason, who works for a large airline, was a product owner, and he's a cyber guy, and he's fantastic at it because he ran a sprint backlog. He knows how to do product owner things.
Sure.
My buddy Ken, who's a chief data privacy officer for a big company in Mass, was a lawyer, and he got into cybersecurity out of being a lawyer. So now his understanding of data privacy and the Fair Credit Reporting Act and the things that a lawyer would know makes him an amazing cybersecurity person. So absolutely leverage that experience that you bring. You know, if you used to be a logistics person, you used to work in an Amazon, fulfillment center, bring that understanding of logistics of how a human being goes and aggregates packages and packs them to being a cybersecurity person. Like it's absolutely the type of job where we are in every single area of every single industry now. Your car has cybersecurity around it. So you're absolutely, there is an incumbent need upon you to be, conversant in those other realms.
Well, and it was expected of us, you and I growing up in the military culture to, yes, maybe we're an artillery guy. Yes, maybe we're an intel guy, but we also are a warfighter. We also are a leader. We also are a caretaker. We're also a psychologist, a hostage negotiator. All the other responsibilities get levied upon us. I tell you, Ron, this has been a delight. I think we need to revisit. I'd love to spend some more time with you. I think you've got great vision and some great experience. You bring some wonderful energy to our industry, and so our industry. So I'm delighted to know you're out there carrying the banner for us. Thanks for being on the show, Ron.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for doing it. Make sure to let people know I'm not stingy on LinkedIn. So if they want a connection request, if they need help, if they want whatever boring advice I can offer them, I'm always happy to connect with people.
Sure enough, you even connected with me. I was so excited.
Well, I'm a huge fan of SecureSet, so I may be a little biased there. I'm a huge fan of the mission that you execute at SecureSet in getting veterans and non-veterans alike job training to be cybersecurity professionals. So I'm a huge fan of that as well.
Indeed. Well, thank you. And this has been Abe Thompson with Vice President of ScaleSec, Ron Savonda. I'm coming to you from the SecureSet studios here in Colorado Springs. Good day on the new Cyber Frontier.
Thank you for listening to New Cyber Frontier. Remember to follow or like our post and circulate each new show to your networks. We keep you informed, bring you the latest news, explore new trends, and find the hottest topics. With New Cyber Frontier, you don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert. Just get plugged in. We encourage you to get involved. Tell us what topics interest you and join our mailing lists. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. That's newcyberfrontier.com. Check out our previous interviews and please let us know if there are any topics that you would like to hear discussed. See you next time on New Cyber Frontier.